to G from San Marcos.
Hi, everybody. I'm Dean. I'm an alcoholic. This is so awkward, and I want to do, like, inappropriate things to it. Sorry. 20 years sober right here. Mine is still there. I'm supposed to thank you for asking me to speak. I don't want to be here, but thank you for asking me to speak tonight. No, I appreciate it. I'm glad to be of service, and I want to thank my friends for driving down with me tonight. It's going to be a really interesting talk. I have no idea what's going to come out of my mouth, but I prayed beforehand. My friend and I went outside and prayed, and I prayed this morning just because life is in session for me right now, and that's what I get being sober. I get the opportunity to show up and participate. My sobriety date is February 10th, 1995. I got sober at 16, and I'm 37, and I have not picked up a drink or a drug in that time. So I took 20 years in February. And you know what's cool about my area up in North County is I am not an anomaly. There are a lot of us up there that have come into AA as youngsters and stayed in AA. And we are very active, and we are a tight-knit group. And it's cool now to have gone from, I literally grew up in AA, And, you know, I get a lot of the handshakes and a lot of the pats on the back for coming in and staying sober young, but it was not my choice, guys. I mean, I drank myself here, and I didn't necessarily want to get sober as a 16-year-old alcoholic. I mean, who wants to go to high school sober? I mean, come on. You know what I mean? I mean, it's awkward enough being in high school, but then not having booze and drugs behind that just was terrible, you know? And it was like, not really, but it was awkward. And, you know, all my friends would go out on Friday nights and, you know, Saturday nights and party, and I'd be like, I'm going to AA. And, you know, I got sober because I think what happened was I was graced with the gift of willingness, really, is what happened. And I do think it was a gift. I think I was graced with the, when I read in the big book that it talks about we can go on to the bitter end, blotting out the consciousness of our existence or accept spiritual help. At 16 years old, nobody had to explain that to me. I knew exactly what they were talking about. I've been sober longer than I drank, which is probably not something that a lot of people in here can relate to. Maybe there's a few, but it is my story, and that's where I come from. But I assure you that I do have a problem with drugs and alcohol. It took everything from me in my life that I had. Mario, I related so much to what you were saying, and thank you for speaking, and welcome to the people that were new. And that's one of the reasons I knew that I belonged in AA was because I identified, and I still identify. No matter what our stories are, I identify. You know, I had a lot of excuses as being a teenage alcoholic why I didn't belong in AA because I didn't have, you know, some of the ifs and the yets yet. I mean, I had been in jail and I had gotten kicked out of my house and gotten kicked out of school, but, you know, I was just rebellious teenage stuff. It doesn't mean I have a drinking problem, right? But the thing that got me to AA was that gift of willingness and the fact that I put drinking and drugging above everything else in my life, and I was willing to make that sacrifice. Not only was the ism and the addiction, but it was a conscious choice. I participated in my disease 100%. Nobody forced me to, you know, do the things I was doing and hang out with the people I was hanging out with and drink and drug like I was drinking and drugging. Nobody told me that, hey, today you need to get up and smoke heroin before you go to ninth grade, you know. Nobody was saying, like, this is an effective coping tool for life. Here's some tinfoil, you know, like, I made those choices on my own. And, you know, I had relationships with my family that were going downhill. My aunt is one of those people that sticks out in my mind because she's, you know, hardcore and she's awesome. And I call her my steel magnolia. That's what she reminds me of. You know, she's really smarmy. That's probably where I get it. She's really sarcastic. And I remember her shaking me by the shoulders in the kitchen and begging me to stop doing whatever I was doing because I was dying and they could see it. And I took a swing at her, you know, because for somebody in who's not in the disease, that doesn't have the disease that I have, for anybody to ask me to stop drinking or drugging is like basically asking me to cut a limb off. They don't understand. You don't understand what it is, why I do what I do, and how badly I need to drink. You don't get it. And that was one of the reasons I identified in AA, because people did get it. You know, drinking and drugging made me feel normal. It made me feel like I fit. It made me feel like I could breathe. It made me feel like that feather in the wind that I had been my whole life, that never felt comfortable in her skin and never wanted to be around people and always was awkward and anxious and everything else. When I drank and drugged, that all went away because I wanted to get to the point where I drank and drugged enough that I just didn't care anymore. And it happened. And along, what I didn't know, what along with that came the fact that I didn't care about my friends and my family. I didn't care about school. I didn't care about the situations I was putting myself in. And eventually what started happening was I was a daily drinker and a drug user, and there was no functioning for me, you know. I would love to, I hear people talk about in AA sometimes, it's like, you know, they get sober older, and they're like, yeah, you know, they get sober, you know, let's say in their 40s, and it's like they've gotten married, they've gotten the college degrees, they've come out of a blackout, and they have all this stuff, and I have like a bit of envy for that, because I'm like, geez, I would have loved to like just come out of my drinking and just have my whole life kind of squared away, you know, and it's like I was awake for most of it, okay, because I got sober at 16, and so I had to go through like the end stages of puberty and all that stuff sober, and it's so funny, because only as an alcoholic am I like congratulating myself, oh, we did not drink, dude. You know what I mean, like most 16-year-olds don't, it's not that big of a deal, but to me it was like, no, I really didn't drink. And so, you know, getting sober at that age was great, and it's a gift, but growing up in AA is it's a unique experience. And, you know, I did not come into AA. I was brought here the first time by my mother and my aunt, actually. They did an intervention on me, and they took me to my first rehab facility. I was 14 at that time, and I was already failing out of school, and I had all the consequences of being the drinker that I was, and I was getting in trouble, and all that stuff happened, and I was getting ready, actually, to run away from home, and I went home and was packing my stuff, and my aunt and my mom came in, and they said, oh, hey, will you just come with us grocery shopping? And I was thinking, oh, perfect, I can get food for the road, you know, and take it to wherever my friend and I were planning to go. And I got in the car, an hour and a half later, I was in a rehab facility in Orange County. And I remember sitting in there, and when I got there, I was not happy to be there, and I told the intake counselor that, you know, you guys can keep me here until my insurance runs out. I'm drinking when I leave. And that was pretty much my attitude. So I didn't go in with a desire to stop drinking, but I did get to introduce AA there, and I liked it. I mean, why wouldn't I like it, you know? I mean, you guys, most of you, maybe not all of you, but most of you, I would drink with, you know what I mean? And I liked the people, you know. The guys gave me cigarettes at the CA meeting, you know, and I heard all these stories of things I wanted to do. I was like, keeping lists, okay, was it crack? Yes, okay. You know, and it was like, I was like, that was my general attitude. And one thing that did stick out to me while I was in there, they said that if you're truly an addict, you won't be able to stay sober for any period of time on your own, and the time will come that you will drink again. And that somehow got some planted in me, and I have some, like, kind of bad news for the newcomers. Like, I'm just going to be honest. I don't want to, like, curse you or anything, but I'm going to kind of. Like, AA seriously fucks up your drinking. Like, it just does. And so, sorry, you know, like, but I had some sort of supplanted seed from that experience, and I got out of there and I relapsed. And what happened was I started to see some of the things they were talking about. I didn't drink and use with people my age. I drank with people who were probably my age now. I drink and use with people who are a lot older than me, and I'm glad I did that, not only because I had access to a lot of stuff, but I got to see the yets and live and living color from people. I had friends that were going to jail and prison. I had a girl that I used to babysit her daughter. I mean, this is kind of another example of the drinker and drugger that I am. They would pay me in black tar heroin and Southern Comfort to babysit her daughter. And they would go out to the bars because I wasn't old enough to go, and I would smoke heroin and drink and take care of her kid. And that seemed perfectly normal to me. And, you know, when I got sober, I heard that she put a shotgun in her mouth and pulled the trigger, you know, and her daughter found her. And so these were the kind of people that I was hanging out with. We were alcoholics and we were addicts, and I saw what was coming down the road. And, you know, at 16, it was like, it scared me because I knew how I was feeling, and I was waking up every day. I used to think, you know, that I would get lucky. I had things when I was drinking that I'd be like, well, if I drink and drive, if I drink enough and I drive and get behind the wheel of my car, maybe I won't make it home. or maybe if I do this line of whatever this is, maybe I'll have a brain aneurysm. I mean, that was kind of the reality I was living in. So I wasn't like a happy-go-lucky drinker. I was at the party, first one there, doing all the stuff, hanging out with all the people, and I had an obsession that I didn't even understand, but I knew that when I couldn't get a hold of what I needed to get a hold of, it was like, it was apocalyptic, like the whole world was crumbling, and I was angry and obsessed and needed it. And so the second time I went to a rehab facility, I put myself in. And I had gotten arrested out of state with a couple guys that, you know, I didn't know, but I went on a road trip with them because it seemed like a good idea. Well, because they had what I wanted, basically. So I got in the back of a car and drove with them across state lines. And apparently when you're a minor, you're not supposed to do that. I didn't know. And so we ended up getting picked up. Big surprise. We were in some place, and they pretty much clocked us as soon as we got in the door. And I got arrested and went to jail. And I always thought that was going to be like a badge of honor, like make me feel super cool. And, you know, like, especially, I think I wanted to wear it too, being a 16-year-old alcoholic coming in AA, like, people would tell me sometimes in the beginning, like, I spilt more than you drank. And I'd be like, well, if you spilt so much, you know, you probably would have gotten here sooner. And, like, I remember, I remember trying to have that as a badge of honor that at least I had been to jail and stuff, but I didn't feel, like, awesome getting arrested. You know, it wasn't like, oh, this is a good day, you know, I was embarrassed. I was ashamed. And I was out of state, and I didn't want to go home because I was afraid that somebody was, like, literally going to kill me because I had gotten these two guys in trouble. And I was afraid that they were going to not only come after me physically, but that, you know, well, I'd be ostracized first and foremost, and there goes my connects, right? So I was freaked out about that. And it wasn't a positive thing, but what happened to me in the process of that was when I got back to California, you know, I lied to my mom about it, and there's this whole big drama behind that, and she picked me up at the airport in handcuffs, which I'm sure was a good day for her. And I got in a car with her, and something had shifted. And I looked at her, and I said, listen, you got to get me help. Like, you don't know the things that I'm doing. You don't know the people I'm hanging out with. I am scared, and if I don't get sober and I can't seem to stay sober, like, I'm going to kill myself. Like, I can't do this. And, you know, I came in with that degree of willingness, but when I came into rehab the second time, I still wasn't super thrilled about actually having to face a lifetime of being sober because I didn't know how to do that. I had no clue how to do that. And I remember the day, in my first 90 days in rehab, like, sitting down on my bed and realizing that I could probably never drink or drug again. And it was around reading that passage in the Big Book and just sobbing like a baby because I didn't know who I was or what it was going to be. And I had this whole timeline stretched out in front of me of all these years I possibly still had to live without drinking and drugging. It was just overwhelming. And, you know, I got involved after about 90 days in there. I finally kind of started getting involved in the program, and I had been to all these therapists. I had everybody trying to get me to quit drinking before I actually went to rehab this time. I had hypnotherapists and priests lay hands on me and freaking witch doctors and interventions, and I mean, I'm not kidding, like, my parents were running the gamut, and like, my friends were starting to 12-step me. They didn't know they were doing it, but they'd be, like, drinking and doing our thing, and they'd be like, you know, you probably should slow down, you know? And I had everybody trying to convince me that maybe I had a problem, and it took me about 90 days in some regard for the fog to lift and start sort of paying attention. And what happened was somebody came into the facility I was in who was a member of AA, and I had gotten high in there. My roommate had left her prescription medication out back in the day when they still let patients do that. And some of my other roommate and I chopped it up and we snorted it, and we had to go to this CD meeting. And I remember just sitting there and trying to maintain in this meeting. And this guy came in and he told a story. And this is through all the process of everybody in my life trying to tell me about what it's like to be sober and blah, blah, blah. But this guy knew me. And he talked about things that I had, you know, had been thinking and feeling but never told anybody. And he just shared so openly. And I remember being just floored that somebody could express exactly how I thought and felt. And he got done and I broke down. And he came up to me after the meeting and he put his hand on my knee and he said, you know, you don't ever have to feel like you're feeling again. And I got sober. And I came out of that facility, and I remember some of the things they were telling me, you know, about trying to do 90 and 90 and finding sponsors and all that type of stuff. And I got out and I came back to, up to North County, and I started going to meetings. I actually wasn't interested in going to AA up here because really I was afraid and I didn't want to go to meetings. So I tried to get sober through the church, and I'm not saying that's not possible. Just for me, it wasn't working. And there was one other young person in this meeting that we were going to at this church, and she kept drinking. And I was grateful for her because she could not stay sober, and it made me realize, like, if I didn't get my butt to an AA meeting, I was going to follow suit. I was going to do the same thing. So I finally ended up going to this women's meeting. Now, I'm the type of person that, you know, I tend to have, like, these delusions of grandeur where I think I'm kind of cool, you know, and I'm sort of egocentric and self-centered, and I don't know, I always get this, like, John Travolta visual in my head when I talk about, I don't know, why, like, staying alive, like, I'm finger-gunning everybody, I don't know, and I don't know where that comes from, but, like, I had this, like, I'm Fonzie, hey, and I had this sort of idea of myself, and let me tell you what it was really like. So this is going on in my head, but in reality, my mom's driving me around. My mom is taking me to meetings and driving me around the block like 3 or 4 times because I'm scared to walk in the door. And I finally got enough courage to walk in the door, and I'm one of the ones that showed up late, head down, went to the back seat, never shared. And I was at a women's meeting too, like barf, you know, but it was a women's meeting. And I went to this meeting, and I started going fairly regularly. I would always show up late. I would always leave early. And one time they caught me and they called on me. And I was probably about 6 or 7 months sober at that time. And I was petrified. And I remember I was the type of person in the very beginning, I would share. I, like, this was impossible when I was new. Like, the fact that I can be up here and doing this is a huge, it's a testament to AA and the 12 steps, because there was no way when I came in I could do this. And I would turn bright red, and I started sharing, and I cried. And I was mortified, you know, because John Travolta doesn't cry. You know what I mean? Like, Fonzie's like, it's all good. And I'm like, snot bubbly, crying, just like, you know, those really ugly cries where you're, those kind of things? Like, I was doing that. And I was just like, oh, my God. Like, my head's like, shut up, shut up, shut up. But I'm just like, I'm bawling. And I ran out of that meeting. As soon as that meeting was over, I was out. And I did not go back to that meeting because I was afraid of what people thought of me. That's how bad it was. And because, you know, it's all about me. You know, I'm not thinking about what I'm really thinking about. My main concern is, you know, what you think about me, you know. And that doesn't make me self-centered. And so I waited some time, and I remember thinking, well, they probably don't remember me. I could probably go back to that meeting. It had been like a couple months. And so I went back to that meeting, and the lady remembered me. And she was like this tall. She was a little pixie girl, and she came up to me, and I, you know, my head was down, so it was really perfect, actually, because she was like right underneath me. And she was like, I remember you. You shared, and you were really upset. And I was like, oh, my God. And she was like, do you have a sponsor? And I was like, mm-mm. She's like, are you looking for a sponsor? And I was like, mm-hmm. She's like, do you want me to be your sponsor? And I was like, mm-hmm. And that's how I got my first sponsor in AA. And and so she took me through the steps. We went through the steps through the big book, and it was kind of my first experience doing that. And it was a lot different than anything I'd experienced. And we got through that, and then she told me towards the end of our little partnership there that she was moving. She'd gotten accepted to Berkeley. She was going to move to NorCal and go to school, and she kept saying, hey, before I leave, you need to find someone else to sponsor you, you know? And I'd be like, yes, okay. And she'd be like, no, really, you need to find somebody else to sponsor you. I'd be like, yes, I got it. Find another sponsor. So she left, and about 3 weeks after that, I was like, what did she tell me to do? And so I did find another sponsor, and he was 24 and rode a skateboard. And we listened to punk rock and ate rice and beans, and we just tiptoed down the trail of sobriety. And in the middle of that, we quit going to meetings, and it was really romantic, you guys, though. You don't understand. Like, we would watch WWF on Monday nights and eat beans and rice and read the big book. Like, it was so sweet. And we pretty much did that for a while, and we got totally in our little zone. And if you want to see crazy, like, get me out of the meetings for a while with no program and relying on a boyfriend as a higher power and a sponsor. And Like, I don't recommend that. And if you're not convinced that alcoholism is a mental disease, try it. You'll find out. So hopefully you don't drink and die, but, you know, try it. So I was about 2.5 years sober at this point. I was 18, almost 19, and I had a flair for the dramatics, and I remember I was miserable. I was miserable. And I got back to that suicidal place, and I remember I was telling him one night, I'm like, I'm going to go walk in front of the train, in front of the apartments. And even though I was being sort of dramatic, I was also serious because I had no program, and I was an alcoholic that had no program, and I wasn't drinking. We'll talk about hell on earth. That's what that is. And so he was like, okay, check it out. I'm taking you to this meeting. You're going to get a sponsor or we're going to break up. And that was kind of my motivation. I'm like, okay. So he drove me in my car to this women's meeting on Tuesday night at 6 o'clock. It was in Oceanside. And there was a lady outside, and she was smoking a cigarette. Never seen her before. And she was outside. She said hi to me, and so I asked her to be my sponsor. And what ended up happening was, this is kind of a big like aha moment for me with my higher power in the beginning, was she ended up being like a major big book thumper, and she was super involved in North County AA. And like her sponsor and her grand sponsor like started half the meetings up there, and like they were all circuit speakers, and I was in for it, basically, is what happened. And she told me things. I remember she would tell me things like, I'd call her up and I'd be like, Janice, I gave him this shirt for Christmas and he doesn't like it. And then she'd be like, have you gone to a meeting today? No, but you don't. Okay, bye. Call me when you go to a meeting. Click. You know, and I would call her up with yet another thing. And I'd be like, Janice, you know, like my button on my pants broke and it's just such a shitty day. And, you know, she'd be like, what are you doing today? Well, I'm going to go to a meeting. Okay, great. I care more about what you do than how you feel. Click. So that was kind of the sponsorship. That was kind of the sponsorship I got in the beginning, and I'm grateful because I needed it. And what's really funny, she gave me my 20-year token in February, and because I'm still friends with her, and she gave me my 20-year token, and she got up at the podium when she was giving it to me, and she just, half the first half of the cake was her cracking up, and all she could get out was, you were so crazy. So she taught me what it meant to be a member of AA. She told me things like, you have to have 3 commitments a week. 2 of those meetings have to be women's meetings, and 2 of those meetings have to be big book meetings. You have to go every day. You have to call me every day. We're going to be working the steps. We're doing them once a week. Like, she was on me. And at that point, I was willing. And, you know, we ended up working together. I mean, the boyfriend and I broke up, but miraculously. But she and I stayed together for about another 7 or 8 years. And that Tuesday night women's meeting was my home group for a decade. And I loved that meeting. I secretaried that meeting. I was a part of that meeting. And I'm looking around here tonight and all the service that you guys are doing and how involved you and you are in the community. And it's amazing to me because it's a strong meeting. You can sense that when you walk in the door. And it's a big deal. And that's the kind of meeting that I got sober in. And that's the kind of meeting that... that's how I participated too. And so I was really grateful for that meeting and those women in that meeting who I'm still friends with and I've been friends with pretty much since the beginning. And, you know, unfortunately she and I sort of split up, and I remember, part of that was because, you know, I was young. And, you know, when you're younger and you get sponsored sometimes, or maybe other scenarios as well, sometimes, you know, she kind of turned into a parent a little bit. And that started not being sort of a symbiotic sort of experience. And I remember that I realized the relationship wasn't working and how freaked out I was by that, because here she was, and she was the Fonzie in AA. She was like, she was involved, and everybody knew her, and I was so scared to not have her as a sponsor anymore because I thought, oh my God, I'm going to be like Gypsy AA, and like I'm going to be uncool, and nobody, what am I going to do? So I prayed about it, and I ended up getting another woman out of that meeting, that same Tuesday night meeting, who was my sponsor for another 10 years. And she took me to the next level. And I share about that because making major changes like that in the foundation, sometimes being sober, is scary, you know? But that's when I really have to come again to that reliance on my higher power and trust the process, you know, and trust on being led in the direction I need to go. That's what happened. And this woman ended up taking me to a different level of sobriety. And I'm so grateful for her. We don't work together anymore because she's in her 90s and she's got like 40 million years of sobriety. And she just doesn't have the same energy she used to. But we still talk once a week. And You know, it was learning how to be in the fold of Alcoholics Anonymous that really saved my life. And so now I'm going to kind of get to the dark stuff. So when I was about 7 years sober, I ended up dating somebody that was drinking. And, you know, against suggestion by people that I was obviously being sponsored by and hanging out with. And it was a really miserable time. Was it self-will? 100%. And I started, you know, kind of getting back in the folds of really being around somebody that was an alcoholic. And the self-will of that really messed with my head, so that when I came out of that relationship, finally got willing to leave it, I had a desire to drink like I had never had before. And I don't know if anybody relates to that, but you sit in a meeting and get thirstier. You sit in a meeting and you're fidgeting, you can't sit still, and you hear things you relate to, but it's just making you want to drink even more. I mean, it's an uncomfortable thing. And if there's anybody in that place tonight, I do want to encourage you to keep coming back, because if you stay in the fold, it eventually will go away. And I just was so involved. It was like and it wasn't by choice. It was like every time I prayed for my sobriety, got up in the morning and did what I was told. I prayed for my sobriety, and at night I thanked God for my sobriety, and through the day I was nuts. But I would go to a meeting, and I would always get, like, called on to share. Or I'd go to a meeting, and the secretary had quit, and then all of a sudden I'm a secretary of a meeting. And all these chicks started coming out of the fold that needed a sponsor. And I was like, oh, man. And I just, at that time, I was so sort of dead inside. Like, we just would read the big book together. And working with others and being involved was the thing that kept my head above water until God saw fit to relieve my obsession to drink. And it was the thing that absolutely saved my life. It's still the thing that saves my life. When I'm in the thick of whatever is going on, if I take my time to call somebody else, find out how they're doing, show up when I say I'm going to show up, or do things like, that's why I was joking about not wanting to be here tonight, because I really don't want to. But if I do what I'm supposed to do, I am putting that insurance policy like Dr. Bob talks about. I'm taking out that insurance policy that I'll get one more day sober. And so I take that extremely seriously, and I think also it's my responsibility as a sober member of AA. That's what I'm here to do, you know, because just like I identify still and like I identified then, you know, nobody else speaks my language but you guys, you know, not in the same way. You know, I've tried to share with normies sometimes, and not that they're not great, and I have a lot of normie friends, but every once in a while I remember that they're normies, because I'll say something, and they'll be like, huh? And how did you get there from this? And I'm like, oh, this is busy. You know, like, I've been thinking about that for 48 hours, and I haven't slept. So I'm drinking coffee, and I'm chewing Nicorette. So yeah, I've been thinking about this for like 48 hours. Like, check this out. And look, I have another really good idea about that. And So I need the people in AA to basically. That's the importance, too, of having a home group, is I need people in the program to see the disease before I can, because I have a disease of alcoholism that will rationalize the most insanely trivial things to pick up a drink, that will make an insane idea sound sane, 100%, and I will buy it. I will buy it every time. And so I need to be involved and have a home group too with people that know me, because I need them to tell me when they see it, when my ass is on fire, hey man, you're in trouble, you know? And so I am a big believer in really sticking in the rooms, and it's not anything different than I did, you know, when I first came in. I still try to be involved. I still have a sponsor. We're doing a big book study on Monday nights. Actually, I have three sponsors because it takes a village. What? Like, I stuck around long enough. I got two additional programs. Take that. So, and I'm not saying that's going to happen to everybody, but it might. Get to double digits and we'll see. You know, I have a lot of people that I work with, and I'm grateful for that because I need it, you know. Right now, you know, like, life is in session for me, big time. The last 2 months has been just insane. You know, I travel for one of my jobs, and, you know, I've been traveling a lot for work, and in the middle of that, I found out my mother has cancer. It's a head and neck cancer, stage 4, so it's not a good kind of cancer. She had surgery that was, cool, I might not even go that long. She had surgery the day after I got home from Chicago, and it was a 10-hour surgery, and you know what I didn't do? I didn't reach out for help. I totally forgot. I showed up and went and sat there and was with her and was worrying, and I was texting like one or two of my sponsors, but I didn't ask anybody to come with me. And my best friend drove to the hospital and showed up. And it was like, oh my God, that's right. That's what I'm supposed to do. Like, I'm supposed to ask for help, and I'm supposed to let other people support me. And it was like such a huge thing that she went out of her way to come to the hospital. And, you know, in the middle of that, too, I've been working on a dream and a goal, something that I had put time and effort and money and all kinds of things into. And the day after my mom's surgery, that all fell apart. And then the next day, my mom fell. And then the next day, there was some bullshit at work that I was going to call an attorney about because it got really bad at work. And then a week later, I crashed my car. So it was just like every freaking door that had been open at one point shut. And, you know, it's been rocky because on top of that, now I decided to stay home with my mom and I'm taking care of her. And I will say this too, and I've been kind of saying it out loud. I'm a drug addict and alcoholic. I'm self-centered to the extreme. And for me to be able to be of service to my mother, okay, is huge, okay? Like, to have the capacity to even think about somebody else, even for like a fraction of a minute of a day, and to show up and do the things that I'm supposed to do for a woman that I beat up on, literally, kicked, screamed at, called names, threatened to kill her, like all kinds, chased her with a knife, like when I was drinking, this is all the stuff I did. To be at this point where, you know, I am helping take care of her is huge. And to find out that being sober after 20 years, it's taken me 20 years, I think, to have the capacity to love another human being like that has been so amazing for me. And, you know, it's still an ongoing process. She's only about halfway through treatment right now, and it's, you know, it's starting to get bad. And, you know, I was with her tonight, which is one of the reasons I didn't want to come down, because she's having a bad day. And I'm not exactly, like, I don't feel super spiritual right now. Like, I've got no veneer right now. You know what I'm saying? Like, I can't come in and be Fonzie right now, because my ass is kind of on fire. I have real life stuff going on, and shit's tough right now. But I think that's the good thing about being sober, is that I've realized that in order to save my ass, I can't save my face at the same time. And, I love that I'm in a place where, for the most part, I feel safe and can just be whatever I need to be, because my main priority is I go to sleep sober. That's it. And so, you know, Mom and I are going through that, and it's life has taken on a totally different path in the last 2 months. And you know, I've had things happen. That boyfriend that I you know was with when he was drinking ended up dying from alcoholism, and I watched it happen. And, you know, I've gotten audited in sobriety. You know, life continues to happen. And I had the delusion that I got sober and things were going to be like unicorns and rainbows the whole rest of the time, because you owed me because I wasn't drinking. Thank you very much. And that's not the case. And so what has happened instead was, because I showed up and I did the things that people told me to do, and I was willing with that gift of willingness to take the suggestions, little by little I got graced with character. And I got graced with selflessness. And I got graced with the ability to think of other people and to be somebody of my word and to be loving, you know, even when it doesn't come naturally for an addict and alcoholic like me, you know. And it doesn't sound like much, but believe me, if and when, you know, my mom passes, that's the thing my sponsor and I are talking about the most. My side of the street's going to be clean. It's going to be clean. And that is going to be like one of the foundations of my life. That and the fact that I still did what my sponsors, I watched my sponsor, her daughter was passing away, and she called me every day to make sure I was okay. And that was kind of the example that I have, so that I can turn around and do that with my sponsees. You know, in the middle of all this, thank God I have enough wherewithal to call them and make sure they're handled and that they're okay. You know, and that they're doing what they need to do for themselves. And in turn, they help me, because I have to speak program to them, because I have to get out of myself, because I hear things come out of my mouth and I'm like, that came from some other place, you know. You know, and I'm re-looking at my relationship with my higher power, and that's the greatest thing for me in AA, is the fact that I have the power to choose whatever conception I want. It doesn't have to look like anybody else's. But the cool thing was, is that by coming to meetings and listening to you guys talk about it, I have visual proof of the miracles of a higher power, because we're sitting in the room tonight sober. On a Saturday night, we're sober and hanging out together. And it's like, okay, there's, and this is a program that's gone on with our alcoholic type of personalities for almost 80 years. Like, there's something happening in the rooms. And this is my visual proof, you know, that by listening to you guys and watching you walk through similar things, I know I can get through this time in my life sober, you know. And if that is the only gift that I get, just coming down and doing this and putting one foot in front of the other, I think that's pretty good. So, thanks.